So thank you all for coming, and now let me introduce our first speaker. Dr. David Gluck received his medical degree from Cornell University Medical College, and after a medical internship and residency at Upstate Medical Center in New York and 2 years in the Army, he entered the field of occupational medicine. He is board certified in two specialties, internal medicine and preventive medicine. After over 30 years in practice and a long friendship with Dr. Bernard Bihari, who is the discoverer of the clinical effects of low-dose naltrexone, Dr. Gluck retired and, along with his son, has devoted himself over the past 7 years in spreading information about LDN to the world through his website, www.ldninfo.org. To get us started this morning, he will briefly review some of the many highlights of LDN progress since the first annual conference, which was held in June 2005 in Manhattan. Please join me in welcoming Dr. David Gluck.
Good morning. So we come together, our little crew here, to talk about an amazing medication. It's probably the best-kept secret in the medical world today, and it's probably one of the biggest medications to come down the pike, as they say, in 50 years. Here's something that is reliable and with virtually no downside. Quite an unbelievable drug, and the medical groups have shown their appreciation by not believing it. But I think that when you hear what our speakers have to say today, it's going to be a much, much stronger case. What I wanted to do was to speak about some of the highlights that have emerged since the June 2005 conference that are worth noting. You know, there are a couple of large hurdles between what is received wisdom in the medical world and what LDN has as its working hypothesis. One of the big issues has been the idea that's spread amongst doctors and the lay public that autoimmune diseases are, of course, diseases where the immune system goes haywire. It's so strong, it's so overaggressive that it breaks its bounds and starts attacking one's own tissues. There was, in the recent New England Journal of Medicine issue, a big piece on immune mechanisms. They never speak about what a controlling factor might be for the immune system. There's no real mention about the possibility that endorphins might be the major beneficial regulator of the immune system. That's not yet crept into, as I say, received wisdom. So here's this idea of an overstrong immune system, and the LDN hypothesis is no. These are immunodeficiency diseases, where the body doesn't really send the information appropriately that this immune system is attacking self. And if one can strengthen the immune system by upregulating the endorphins, as LDN appears to do, why, you've normalized the immune system, and it knows the difference, and the progress of the attack is halted. And we've seen that over and over again in virtually every autoimmune disease for which it's been used. Two of the high points of this past year have been two scientific publications. Last June, there was a paper that appeared in the Annals of the New York Academy of Sciences. It's an interesting coincidence that it emerged just at the time that our first LDN meeting was being held at the NYAS in New York. This was a piece in an entire issue from the NYAS. The whole issue was called Autoimmune Diseases and Treatment, and a group of researchers from Belgium published a paper within it called Premature Immunosenescence in Rheumatoid Arthritis and Multiple Sclerosis Patients. I don't know how many of you have ever heard the word immunosenescence. It was a new one for me. But what they were saying was they studied a reasonably large group of normal people. They studied people with rheumatoid arthritis, and they studied people with multiple sclerosis. And what they were doing was looking at immune markers of the strength of the immune system. It turned out that those who had the autoimmune diseases had immune systems that were very much like that of people who were extremely elderly. They had weak immune systems, which supports the LDN hypothesis. Then, much more recently, out of the BBC online health news about a month or two ago, came a notice that a Dr. Anthony Siegel of the University College of London was publishing a piece on patients with Crohn's disease, another classic autoimmune disease. We're going to hear more of that today. And what Siegel and his group found, and they measured a whole host of other immune markers, ability to heal a wound and so forth, compared it to normals, and found that the folks who had, well, let me quote him, found in the people with Crohn's disease, a weakened immune system, not an overactive one, as had been suspected, may cause the intestinal disorder Crohn's disease. So there we have three autoimmune diseases discussed within this past year, all of them showing weak immune systems and supporting the LDN hypothesis. Speaking of Crohn's disease, our keynote speaker today, who's sitting here in the first row, Dr. Jill Smith, professor of gastroenterology at Hershey Medical Center at Penn State, told us that she has not one but two research papers, and I'm sure she'll be telling us more of this when she speaks. But it's the idea of where she's going to be presenting them. She's going to be presenting these papers. They've been accepted at the premier American Gastroenterologic Association's meeting, Digestive Diseases Week in LA, and the third week in May, I believe, she'll be presenting them out there. Can you imagine a professional meeting that's attracting over 20,000 attendees? And they'll be hearing about low-dose naltrexone. So that's why I think this is an important year for LDN moving forward. And on the clinical research area, we're going to hear this morning from Dr. Jacqueline McCandless, who you can't talk about important events for LDN since last June without pointing out Dr. McCandless's breakthrough work of LDN and autism, which has us all amazed, and we're going to hear the details about that later this morning. I spoke within the past few weeks with Dr. Myra Gironi. Perhaps some of you remember her, the doctor, neurological researcher from Milan, Italy, who was at the June 2005 conference, and I wanted to see how things were coming along with her research. It was she and Dr. Sacerdote in her group in Milan that did the very important work in 2003, I think they published, on how every category of multiple sclerosis was marked by low endorphins, which was, again, substantiating of the whole LDN hypothesis. And it was interesting when you look at the bar graphs to see that the more serious the category of MS, the lower the average endorphins were in those patients. At any rate, I asked Myra how things were coming along with the next step, which was going to be so promising in clinical research. She is planning a clinical trial for patients with multiple sclerosis using low-dose naltrexone and finally measuring endorphins throughout the study, before, during, and after. And she said her best calculation, and she's gone through many hurdles to raise the money, et cetera, meet all the rules and regulations, probably in 2 or 3 months, they'll be signing up the first patients for that trial. So we're certainly looking forward to that. I also spoke this past week with a doctor of public health, Marianne Richardson, who is vice president on the board of the National Foundation on Alternative Medicine. She's just back from the African country of Mali. I believe she was there with Fiona Eberts, who also attended the 2005 conference. They went to Mali because, maybe some of you remember, and Mr. Saini Nafo, who spoke at the conference, who has been pushing a trial for LDN for HIV/AIDS in Africa, which would be a wonderful breakthrough of great importance because low-dose naltrexone can offer so much to people with infections with HIV/AIDS. Marianne spoke with Dr. Cater there, who is the principal investigator for the planned trial. The protocols are in place. They now have two possible avenues. He may try to go down both. There's a pilot trial with three arms that's planned, and there's a full-fledged clinical trial involving hundreds of people. So we're waiting very hopefully for that. And finally, I'm pleased to note that this past month saw the first published report describing a cancer patient for whom low-dose naltrexone was used as a principal treatment. The man in his 40s had been told by a major cancer center in the Southwest that there was no further active medical treatment available for his situation. Diagnosis: pancreatic cancer with multiple liver metastases. He had had chemotherapy, he had little response. He went to Dr. Burton Berkson and his colleagues who treated him since that time. Dr. Berkson is a big believer in antioxidants, and they treated him since that time with intravenous treatments of alpha-lipoic acid twice a week. But the main thing is that he was put on nightly low-dose naltrexone in the range of 3 to 4.5 milligrams every night. That was 2002. They reported this case at the start of 2006. This man is at work. He's had no further substantial progression of his tumor, and he's asymptomatic. The name of the paper, just for the record, is The Long-Term Survival of a Patient with Pancreatic Cancer with Metastases to the Liver After Treatment with the Intravenous Lipoic Acid Low-Dose Naltrexone Protocol by Berkson, Rubin, and Berkson. And by the way, when he emailed me to tell me that this had been published in Integrative Cancer Therapeutics, March 2006, he wrote along in his email, he said, "I am so successful with low-dose naltrexone in my patients with lupus, in my patients with rheumatoid arthritis." And he said, "Now, of course, I have several patients who are starting it who have cancer." So now we're into the journals and hope to be in the journals for every one of the major thrusts of low-dose naltrexone: autoimmune diseases, cancer, and hopefully in the future with HIV/AIDS. Having mentioned some notable forward steps in these three major areas, perhaps I have a little time left. I don't know, how do I stand, Joel?
Oh, you're doing fine for time. You've got 15 minutes.
Oh, great, okay. So I have a little time left. I wanted to read you the most important thing, which are comments that come in by patients who've been using low-dose naltrexone. And these people, the three of them that I'm going to read their messages, they each separately said that they specifically did not need to have their identity suppressed. They're happy to have themselves identified. The first message came in the very beginning of March from Carol, whose Hallmark email address is sunnybright56, and this is what she wrote. "LDN has done so much for my MS and just proved that to the new neuro who told me she couldn't take me on as a patient because I don't follow the conventional protocol for MS. We had quite a debate last week in her office. She told me, quote, 'Go for an MRI. I'm sure you have active lesions, and when we see that on the report, you must agree to start an IV treatment, and then we'll talk about going back to the injectables,' end quote. Needless to say, I looked at her like she had 8 eyeballs, but agreed to the MRI for my own curiosity and told her I'd be crazy to change anything I was doing for myself. Well, the report is in. It remains exactly the same as when first starting LDN in September of 2002. Keeping in mind, my first MRI in 1999, when the diagnosis was relapsing remitting MS, showed 4 prominent lesions, and the MRIs since LDN show only 2, and 1 is difficult to see." So the neuro swallowed hard and said, "Your MS is doing wonderful, nothing active. It's not progressed, it stayed the same." And I said, "Well, maybe now you'll read all the information I gave you about LDN, and oh, next time I come in, we'll discuss whether or not I want to keep you on as my neuro." She told me to please come back. I told her I'd think about it. She hugged me and I left. I'll give her some time to read up on LDN and think about things and decide if I really want to go back. Anyway, I just wanted to share this with all of you. I have been a believer in LDN since the day I started it in 2002. And then she's made up a remarkable slogan, and she ends it by saying, "Until there's a cure, there's LDN." God bless you all, Carol. A remarkable message came in at the very last day in February from a woman named Catherine, who has Lou Gehrig's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. And she said, please feel free to identify her and read her message. The subject heading on the email that she wrote was using LDN for ALS, great news. For those of you who don't know, there is no treatment for ALS that's known. She wrote, I am in my ninth week of taking LDN. I was diagnosed with motor neuron disease, ALS, in November of 2004. I have felt that my ALS has not progressed since starting the LDN, and over the last week or so, I was noticing some increased tone in my muscles, something that hasn't happened since almost a year prior to my diagnosis. Yesterday, I went ahead and measured my thigh muscles. In the last 2 months, I've actually gained a quarter inch in circumference of my left thigh and half inch in the circumference of my right thigh. I realize these could be incidental findings, but I did measure at the same time each month and have had no dietary changes, so I doubt there is any chance of fluid retention affecting the results. This is the only time that there has not been muscle loss, let alone gain, since my diagnosis. Since I started the LDN, I've been able to do a light stretching, yoga tape 6 days a week, and trying to ride a stationary bike 3 minutes per day. However, prior to the LDN, I was unable to do these things. I honestly believe that the combination of LDN and exercising is perhaps arresting or even slightly turning back the course of my disease. I would strongly encourage anyone with ALS to try the LDN. I'm not aware of anyone else who has actually stopped progressing in this manner. And then she writes, I was also thinking about all of you who have MS. Because it generally is not a steady course like ALS, to me this is a good indicator that the LDN really works. We've been tracking my muscle wasting by measurements as well as by other means since diagnosis. In some ways, I'm fortunate to have a disease that can actually be quantifiably measured in its progression. So if it's causing visible results with ALS, I would think it is doing something very similar with MS. Thanks for allowing me to share my good news. Take care, Catherine. And finally, let me read some long excerpts from a message from Bill Roberts from Alabama, who also was pleased that he would be identified. And this came in March. This came in just last month. My name is William Roberts. I'm 56 years old and was diagnosed with relapsing remitting MS in 1998. Several years later, my diagnosis was changed to secondary progressive MS. I have been on Avonex, Copaxone, and Rebif of the ABCR drugs. I have had plasma exchange and chemotherapy, Cytoxan, as well as many, many rounds of IV steroids, Solumedrol. As late as July of 2005, and this is the line to really focus on, as late as July of 2005, I was completely wheelchair bound on oxygen 24/7 and could not do much of anything on my own. I was having what I would call a new episode almost monthly, and my condition worsened each one. My neurologist, in consultation with another top neuro in Birmingham, Alabama, decided I needed to start coming in every 3 months, regardless of my condition, to have a week's worth of Solumedrol. I told my neuro that I did not believe the steroids were effective enough any longer to do more than increase my obesity. I asked at that time if he would mind if I went to another neuro for further advice, and he graciously agreed. I did so, and after having all new MRIs and MS tests run, my new neuro suggested that I continue taking Rebif for a couple of months to see if I kept having new episodes, but to also prepare to go on chemo again. I told her that I had read good things about LDN and had talked with several people with MS who had improved while taking it. I asked her if she would prescribe it for me. She said she had never prescribed it before, but had read a great deal about it and would prescribe it for me. At the time she prescribed it, I stopped taking the Rebif and started taking 1.5 milligrams LDN per day for the first week. After that, I went up to 3 milligrams per day and have stayed at that dosage. I did not really notice any real improvement for the first 3 months, but I also did not have a single episode during that time. I underline this part because it's really astonishing. In fact, I have not had an episode at all since starting on LDN. After 3 months, I did begin to notice that I had more strength in my legs and arms, and my breathing also improved. over the next 2 months, I went from the condition I described earlier to being able to walk without assistance, to breathe without assistance, to drive again after 4 years, and with increasing exercise, I've reduced my weight from a high of 280 pounds to 232 pounds, and my goal is to get back to my prime weight of 195 pounds by the end of the year. I went for my six-month checkup with my neuro in early December and blew her away with my improvement. She has since prescribed LDN to a number of other MS patients. In early February, I had major surgery that I had been putting off for 30 years. I was really afraid it would cause me to have an episode with my MS. But I also considered it a great test to see if my improvement was more permanent than temporary. While very painful and with a tough recovery period, I'm happy to say that I'm almost completely recovered from the surgery, and I continue to improve where my MS is concerned, too. I've been shouting to the rafters, to friends, and anyone who will listen, and look at the improvements that I attribute to LDN and to my new neurologist's willingness to prescribe it for me. Thank you for the opportunity to make these comments. Sincerely, Bill Roberts. And he lives in Sylacauga, Alabama. Enough said. Thank you very much.